Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. My co-host this morning, as always, is Celeste Carey. And this is KBOO Radio, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 100.7 in Corvallis, and on the web, KBOO-FM. Today is Monday, February 7th, and let's begin the program by first thanking all of you who took the time to become members of our station and have pledged your support, and not only financially, but by committing yourselves to making sure that independent commercial-free radio stays alive and well here in Portland.
And it stays community-based.
And community-based. So we thank all of you who became members, those of you who renewed membership, and all our listeners. We appreciate you because you are the reason why we are here and why we continue to make and share news that remains relevant to our communities. This morning, we are so pleased to continuing our ongoing conversation about things that are relevant to you. We want to talk about an event that is happening this week, but more importantly, about how do we begin to rethink psychiatry and moving mental health recovery forward. Joining us this morning are two organizers of a panel, Rethinking Psychiatric Care, Moving Mental Health Recovery Forward. Joining us are Marsha Meyer, who is a teacher and activist and longtime member of the Economic Justice Action Group. She is co-director of the Real Wealth of Portland and co-chair of the national organization Unitarian Universalists for Just Economic Communities. I think I got that.
Perfect.
Excellent. And also joining us a little bit later is Will Hall, who is a Portland therapist and national leader in peer recovery. He also hosts Madness Radio here on KBOO. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Marsha, this morning.
Yes, good morning.
Oh, good morning, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know, in the past, Celeste and I have spoken about many different issues around health and about healthcare in general, and we thought it was a wonderful opportunity to have a discussion about the movement that you are involved in and in the event that you are sponsoring with Robert Whitaker coming this week. Is that
yes, indeed? And I appreciate that you referred to this as a movement, because it definitely is a movement. And this is a movement not about doing away with medication. I want to make that perfectly clear to everyone listening. This is not against medication for emotional distress or helping you or helping helping us through hard times. It's just that we are looking at many more aspects of helping each other to deal with emotional distress rather than just taking a pill. And we've been inundated with a story that has pretty much pathologized a lot of the aspects of our humanness and given us pharmaceutical drugs to take care of just about everything. So this is what this movement is about. I say it's to take back our humanity, our wholeness, and to use best practices, that's what we're talking about here, best practices, and medication optimization, using medication to the optimum, not just as a silver bullet that's going to cure everything.
Could we first start out by having you explain a little bit about your organization and then a little bit about why the need for this particular event that we have coming up here in Portland?
Thank you. And it is this Thursday, and it is at the First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland. At 7 o'clock, 7 to 9 is when the actual event will be taking place. I'll just say this now so I don't forget. And between 5 and 6:30, we are having a reception in the basement of the church there for anyone that everyone's welcome to mix and mingle and to share their experiences. And what the organization, I'm actually here with two organizations. One is the Economic Justice Action Group of the First Unitarian Church, and this is a very this is based on economics. The story that we have been the one story we've been given, and really a lot of people have believed in, is one that the pharmaceuticals have been writing for about the last 30, 40 years. And it is about profit. It's not about people. Then the other organization that I'm associated with is the Real Wealth of Portland. And I've been here before talking about that. It's based on Rian Eisler's work, The Real Wealth of Nations. And it's about that our real economy is based in our relationships with one another, our relationships with the earth, not with money. Money is a tool. So, again, the two of them really work beautifully as a platform for this issue, because this is an issue about people and relationships with themselves and each other, not with pharmaceuticals. That's just one tool of many.
And as we speak about, you know, this enormous issue that impacts all of us and all of our families and all of our communities, so this is a very important, timely topic that you are focusing on at this point in time. One of the persons that will be a part of this discussion is Robert Whitaker, who is somewhat of a pioneer in terms of this movement. He's the author of Anatomy of an Epidemic.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more about him and the work that he's doing.
Okay, and this is really exciting. The entire title, a lot of these books these days have a long title, mm-hmm. is Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. I met Bob Whitaker last August when he came to Portland. He's from Boston. And he was coming to talk about this book, which came out in April. He was at Powell's, and it was standing room only. I am an activist and an organizer and a teacher. I'm a teacher. I taught for 30 years. That's why I'm a good organizer. You can't teach in a room with no windows.
You can't organize.
That's right. Sixth and seventh graders in a room mm-hmm. with no windows and not be an organizer. So I said to Bob then, I want you to come back and I want to fill up my church because people need to hear this message. And actually, I have to say a lot of people already know what's in this book. And there have been other people who have talked about this discomfort with a model of psychiatric medicine that is pretty much totally based on medication. Mm-hmm. And what he has done, though, which is quite astounding, is he has gone through, I don't think there is a medical study that Bob Whitaker doesn't know about, because he's a medical journalist, an award-winning medical journalist, about psychiatric medication that he does not know inside and out. The story of how he got involved with this is quite amazing because, bless his heart, he was doing a study for the Boston Globe. He was simply looking for the studies that would substantiate what he was writing about because he didn't question this psychiatric pharmaceutical broken brain model, we call it, mm-hmm. and that our chemistry's off and you just take these different pills and it's going to make it okay. He started looking for the studies, being a very thorough investigator, not because he was trying to tear it down, but because he was just trying to substantiate his work. He could not find it. What he mm-hmm. found were studies that said in the short term, these drugs, and I love the word, perturb the brain, and so therefore people's reactions do change. And for some people, it works for a long time, but for the majority of people, what happens is the brain keeps trying to recalibrate, rebalance itself, and in the long run, many people become incapacitated. So this is what he found, and because, as he also did research, he found that we are pathologizing more and more children. We are not only saying they're ADD, but we're also saying they're schizophrenic, bipolar. I'm talking about 3, 4, 5-year-olds and putting them on medication earlier and earlier. We know so little about the miracle of our bodies, you know, the chemistry of our bodies, but especially children. So this has this part where he found no studies except studies that show when children are put on medication, the one thing that is the most constant is that they will grow up to be adults who are on either self-medicated or continue to be on medication. So I want to say one more thing about this. It very much reminds me of the tobacco industry. Any of you that remember Joe the Camel, that you could say that was what broke the camel's back as far as the tobacco industry. We were all in denial about cancer and tobacco and all of that. We wanted to keep smoking. The thing is, when they started this Joe the Camel, and we realized what they're doing here is they are getting... You get a child when they're 7, 8, 9, 10, start smoking, you pretty much can, you know,
you
the majority.
You for life.
You've got an income, right, the pharmaceuticals. And it's happening now with children and pharmaceutical drugs. We know nothing compared to what there is. I just really want to stress that. That is, to me, the Achilles heel of all of this. We can't let this happen to children, and it's happening to children and more children of color, especially little boys of color. That's very interesting.
Well, you know, that resonates with me because I've got 4 grandsons and also a brother. And ADD and a few other associated issues of that spectrum run in the family. Now, exceedingly bright and scattered sometimes. So you're looking at what does this mean for their future if out of the gate, as you said, they are diagnosed and prescribed. Now, my daughter, to her credit, decided that she was going to try other measures. You know, and I'm glad, too, because I told her, I said, well, you know, let's try dietary measures. Make sure they get a big dose of protein in the morning, because back years ago, the first thing we would think when kids are bouncing off is don't give them sugar and give them something to feed their mind so that they can slow down and think. Now, one of them had to take something because he not only had issues with impulsive behavior, but he had some anger management issues. And when you've got a 14-year-old who's well over 6 feet tall, you want to do something to help him to calm down because, if nothing else, everybody else will perceive him as a threat.
You know, I am so glad. I want to make sure that we speak to this. I want to, if nothing else, well, I'm, for one thing, I taught for 30 years. I know what we do to kids in classrooms. We scare the hell out of them.
Yes.
We compare them to one another, A, B, C, D. We sit them in rows, and the ones who cannot stay, as I said, 32 kids in a room that has no windows, and they can't be calm, even as fascinating as I am, they can't be focused on me all the time, then there's something wrong with them.
Right.
Well, maybe there's something wrong with the system. And I say, for one, ADD is EAA, Elevated Attention Asset. These are people who are very aware of lots of things, and to get them to focus on what we want as a society, which is pretty much to be servers these days, then you need to give them drugs. So I want to get rid of the whole idea of mental illness, for one thing.
Right.
I say these are human aspects. I think a lot of people are emotionally disturbed in this society. I am going to make a bumper sticker that says, if you are not emotionally disturbed, you're not paying attention. Because we are the richest country in the world. We have people sleeping on the streets. We have no health care for everyone. And we, what are we? We're not even 5% of the population of the world, and we use over 35% of the resources. These are very, very disturbing facts. And when kids get into their teens, they start realizing all the contradictions. They get emotionally disturbed, and we say
no,
they're mentally ill.
Exactly.
Right. So I say, let's fix these relationships rather than giving them a pill. And some people are calling this chemical restraint. I call it chemical restraint quite often, which is a way to get people where you want them to be when they will not cooperate in a system that I say is very emotionally disturbing.
You're listening to KBOO-FM. This is More Talk Radio. Our guest today is Marsha Meyer, who is an organizer with the movement to help create a more compassionate and meaningful mental health system here in Oregon and across the nation. She is part of an organizing team which will sponsor a workshop panel discussion on Thursday, February 10th, at the First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland, which will include a panel discussions that among the panel will be Robert Whitaker, who is the author of Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullet, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Health in
Wouldn't that be nice?
He's going to write a book in 10 years the other way.
Yes, good.
So I mean, and just in speaking this morning, you touch upon a multiple of issues in terms of the mental health system here. And we talked about a little bit about children. We talked about the use of drugs and the pharmaceutical industry. And people, I think, desire to create a more healthy society, healthy families, but we don't know what to do, and we are inundated. We turn on the television and we see that that we need new drugs, new things to do. How do we begin to attack what first in terms of the health system here in the United States? And is pharmaceuticals an enemy, or can they be an ally in the pursuit of creating a more healthier society?
Well, I think we have to realize that the pharmaceutical industry, like all corporations, their basic reason for being is to make profit. So whether or not we can trust them, we can use the tools that they offer, but we have to know about those tools. We have to know what the alternatives are. And as Celeste said, even the eating part of it is so essential, and exercise. These are no-brainers. Kids used to walk to school. I think about that. I don't know that I could have made it through school if I hadn't walked almost a mile to school and a mile back so that I could transition. It's a wonderful thing. And also, I have to say, Bob Whitaker, he lives in Boston. He's in the air most of the time, flying from here to there, because he is in demand right now, because he has these facts that other people have known, but they've been hidden from us. But he has them between two covers, and he's got them in his mind. He's also, when he leaves here after a week, he's going to Ireland, Scotland, and Finland. There are places where they have a more holistic view.
Yes.
And so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. What we have to do is to educate ourselves, educate our children, and quit pathologizing every aspect of ourselves. And that is what, especially when you watch TV, I've got two campaigns I'm going to be working on until I reach the end of them, which I'm going to live to be 120. So, you know, this is going to be taken care of. One is to take those labels away, all of these negative labels that we do to kids and to each other. And the other one is to make it illegal to advertise drugs on TV. We cannot have alcohol on TV. We can't advertise that. It's against law. Mm-hmm. Or cigarettes. Mm-hmm. These are drugs, and they're being pushed in people's faces all the time. So those are two things. Just think about it. And as this campaign unrolls, and Oregon is like at the forefront. That's why, Robert, this is the third time since August that he has come back to Oregon, and he's coming again in May when we're going to have another event.
Great. Before I open the lines, I want to encourage new callers. We want to thank all of those who have been calling regularly, but we want to encourage people we've never heard from or seldom heard from to give us a call at 503-231-8187. And then when we come back, Marsha, I want to talk about how there's been a lot less emphasis on building the necessary as we put it, our human connections, our networks and coping mechanisms, so that when we do have needs, we have inner resources and human networks to help us address whatever behavior or mental health issues we have. There's a lot less emphasis on that.
And when you call, perhaps we can begin, you can begin by addressing the issues. Explain your encounter with the mental health system and the challenges that you face, or you and your families or friends face. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8032.
8187.
Oh, gosh.
That's all right. It's Monday.
Okay.
Yes. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, Jerry.
Hello. I'd like to ask your guest. She spoke about fixing relationships within her context was the classroom, but I was wondering if she could give some specific examples of how relationships have been fixed such that the issues of misbehavior and things like that are addressed either in children and students or in adults.
I think we really have to use our responsibility as adults. For one thing, I taught for 30 years, but I know the best teacher is a model. So if you have children or children around you watching you, it's not what you say, it's what you do. So if your relationship is with the television, their relationship will also be with the television. If your relationship is with other people, they will learn skills about how to interact in a healthy way with other people. So when I say fixing, I guess it's just a recreating relationships that are really pretty intuitively a given. We are herding animals. We wouldn't be on this earth unless we had, learned to work together. So I think that whole aspect of just building community. At the First Unitarian Church, we've started something. It's based on a model back in Boston. They call it common security clubs. We call it resilience circles.
Yes.
And it's a group of people, and you could do it in your neighborhood, any place, of 20, 30 people, and that come together once a month and have a potluck and just gather. Now, you can do it, like I said, in your neighborhood, whatever associations you have. And if you start with 20 or 30 people, maybe when you have these potlucks, maybe only 5 or 6 show up one time. It's sort of like a family gathering. You know, when you have a family gathering, some of the relatives show up and some don't. But you never say, well, you didn't show up at that one, so you can't come to the next one. It's you just put the invitation out and you build relationships. If you see kids in these settings, they thrive. So I would say it's the modeling. Kids looking at these video games where they're competing all the time, they have to compete in school, bless their little hearts. They don't need to watch even a lot of these games. I'm sorry that we sports is a lot of competition. So I think the cooperation and modeling that is essential.
I understand what you're saying. What would your comment be about hip-hop music?
You know, I don't know enough about hip-hop music, and I know, again, it's what we model. If something is just totally, brutal, and if you, I think there is a responsibility to put some boundaries. Children want, we all want boundaries. You can't just be floundering around. So they need to see boundaries and they need to be put in place. Now, how hard you try to keep those boundaries in place, kids usually go along with it if you're modeling those same boundaries, if we're out of control. So I don't know. I don't know enough about hip-hop music, and I know when you try to take things away from kids, but to sit down and talk to them about what it is that is unacceptable to you and why you are concerned, and ask them for their cooperation rather than telling them what they can do and what they can't do. They want to work together. Kids really do.
One more question, please, if you don't mind. I realize you've been explaining a lot, and I appreciate that. Do you believe that there's ever a place within a family, not necessarily within a school, but within a family, for well thought out and appropriate appropriate corporal punishment on children?
No, never, never. I don't think we have to use physical force on anyone. I mean, you know, there's always really bizarre, but especially children, no. And maybe you have to put them down and hold them down if they're having, you know, let's say a hysterical fit or something, but not to hit them, not to spank them. No, that what you're doing there is modeling exactly what we're telling them not to do. I see no reason ever. And I'll tell you, I learned out of my 30 years of teaching, 6 of those were in kindergarten. What a blessing. I learned everything I needed to know in kindergarten about the goodness of children and of you and of me. They don't want to fight. They don't want to hit each other. They want to cooperate. So, and then I saw as they get more and more frightened by the school system and by things that are going on around them, you know, they get more agitated. But so no, the answer is definitely no.
All righty. Thank you so much for your calls, Jared.
Thank you.
And these were some bedrock questions that people have. You know, when we hear something about strengthening or even fixing, which might scare some people, relations, it goes to the negative aspects. The first thing we think is, well, what's broken or how's it broken or what rules do we use to fix it? And basically, as you said, looking at strengthening relationships, looking at modeling kindness and compassion and patience, all of those things really do help set the tone and timbre for our mental health foundation.
Exactly. Our emotional, it's an emotional aspect of ourselves that we have neglected. We are very much into our minds and our bodies here in the United States, as was Nazi Germany. I want to point this out. But as far as emotions, we tend to pathologize emotions. Hysterical women, people who are oversensitive. I'm telling you that this is coming to the fore now where we're recognizing in order to be whole and to stay with our children and be as vibrant as they are, we have to start recognizing and celebrating emotions, not pathologizing them. And I want to say anyone out there who has been pathologized with all these different labels we give, I would say probably you are acutely sensitive. You're an acutely sensitive person who is emotionally disturbed by things that you really don't feel like you can control. And when you say it runs in families, I think sensitivity probably runs in families.
It does.
But both nurture and nature. Both mm-hmm. nurture and nature. So when they start saying, well, do you have schizophrenia in your family? I say, I have very sensitive people mm-hmm. and caring people in my family.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO FM. We are speaking this morning with Marsha Myers, and she is part of a movement to create a more compassionate mental health system here in Oregon. On this week, on February 10th, there will be a panel discussion at the First Unitarian Church downtown. Give us a call here at 503-231-8187. What has been your experience with the mental health system? What would you do to create a more compassionate system? Let's go to Mike. Good morning,
yeah,
Mike.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, I got a question. Actually, I got a couple of. You know, she talked about relationships with Earth and with one another. One of my questions is, where did God fit in? And where do sin fit in? And how do you not know that what you call mental health isn't really about a person that's being possessed by sin and demonic forces? And how do you not know the Bible call them strongholds? What you're calling mental health problem, how do you know those are not strongholds? And the fact that you're going to be in church really perplexed me that maybe all people need is somebody to pray for them. Maybe that's all they need to overcome whatever problems they have. And I'm just going to leave this with you.
Okay.
The Bible say where there's no vision, the people perish. Anyway, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thank you. What is the relationship between religion and faith and the different
spiritual health and mental health?
Oh, such a beautiful question, and thank you so much for bringing that aspect into this. It's essential, absolutely essential. And yeah, it's not an accident that this is happening in the First Unitarian Church. Being a Unitarian simply means that you think that we're here to make this a better world, and that you think that we're spiritual beings. And a spiritual being is a precious soul. We have seven principles. I won't go through them all, but the first one is the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. The inherent worth and dignity of every human being. That's why this fits so beautifully into the Unitarian Church. The last one is the interconnectedness of the web of life. Again, that we're all connected and that we're working on this together. The spiritual aspect is I believe in love. I totally believe in love. And what I don't believe in evilness. I do believe in fear. And I think where there's fear, then love is pushed aside. Praying, meditating on the goodness, on the love is essential. And all the more we can do that, the healthier. So we all are. So it's very much a spiritual. When I said mind, body, and emotions, I see our emotions as being really connected to our spirits. That's what keeps us really unique, is our feeling for one another and for our environment, for our communities. It's the feeling part that is, you could call it spiritual. This is definitely a spiritual journey of everyone, not just some individuals, but for everyone. I hope that says enough about that, thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you. We're speaking with Marcia Myers. We're talking about the mental health system here in Oregon. What has been your experience, and what do you recommend that we do to improve the system? We have a couple of callers online, and we'll go to our next caller. Mary. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for the show. I really appreciate being able to hear about these things on the air. I participated with Will Hall, who's part of the Hearing Voices Network in Portland, in an open dialogue sort of experimental thing, which is a Finnish way of doing things, where people respond in teams within a short period of time on a first break or, with a family in crisis. And I'm wondering, how we could get a lot of this sort of thing out there. I mean, what I picked up from that was comfortableness with gaps in the conversation, but with complete openness. So the person who was called about can participate or can just be outside of the room as the person who called talks about what was going on for them, and two people respond in a team. And I just found it to be very helpful and to also be partly sort of Carl Rogers-ish, where he, really wants the dignity of the individual, as you were saying earlier, to be all of the individuals, so they concentrate on giving everybody a little bit of time. But it's structured, so, the time can't be, one person can't just go forever, which I'm kind of doing here, but anyway, it's just, I really would like to have us be able to explore a lot of other ways of doing it, because as a social worker, I saw people medicated to the point where they were disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And we can save money and save lives by figuring out how to monitor that. So I'll stop now. Thank you, guys.
Okay, thank you
for your call.
Thank you very much. Bye.
And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, David. David?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. This is one thing that we really don't talk too much about, but really the forgotten, the nameless, the faceless people that really it started with the Republicans and Reagan throwing them out into the streets back when Reagan was elected for president. And now we're still suffering today because of that decision from the corporate elite to save money and to corporatize and profitize the mental health system. So really, we have to get rid of money and the way the money works, because the money's making slaves out of all of us, and the mental health is the same too. I mean, people are getting paid to be, I don't know, it's just really messy. So, but my last thing I'd like to say is, you know, how do we deal with the Christians? There's how many Christians there are in the world, and they're completely insane following a book that they have no idea if it's the truth or not. And I've been finding that the more sociopathic and they hide behind religion to lead these huge flocks of people around through faith and all this stuff. And it's like, how do you deal with that mental problem? Because that really is a mental problem. Religion, the Bible, that's really, I mean, look at what they're doing in the name of the Bible and religion. They're destroying and killing people in Iraq, and they're all around the world. So sure.
Okay.
I think we have to worry about that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you again. That's another dimension of this. I know, again, as the best teacher is a model. We here in Oregon, it's not an accident that although this whole thing of pharmaceutical-led psychiatry has been questioned, and it's being questioned all over the United States, and Bob's book has just really given it a foundation. Like I said, he put a lot of things that a lot of people have known. They've actually hidden the studies that show the long-term results are quite often negative, not for everyone, but for the majority. These things have been said before, but he has done the research and has it. And in a very intellectualized society, that's what we need for the people at sort of up at the top, the administrators and all, to change this. So he's given us that foundation to do the changes that need to be made. It's not an accident that Oregon and Portland are leading the way. It's not an accident that in May, Robert Whitaker is coming back again, and we're going to have a mental health community fair. So we are a model, and that's the best thing we can do. Rather than worrying about, it reminds me when I was growing up and we were always worrying about the neighbors and if they had a divorce and if they did this and they did that, while some pretty horrendous things were going on in our own home. So I say focus on your home, on your community, on your passions, make it as healthy as you can. And there is a spinoff effect, and people are watching Portland. I love Portland Hearing Voices. That's Will Hall's group, because we are hearing voices. We're hearing the voices of each other and of a new way of thinking about how this amazing mental process of ours is going on, and our emotional process. So I guess that's all I can say. It's not, I still work on the peace movement and on economic justice, but I think we've got to focus first. It's like put that mask on yourself first, you know, in the airplane, yeah. and then start worrying. But don't get paralyzed by looking out. There's a lovely quote that's my favorite quote now. Two of them I say now. Ralph Nader, the biggest problem of our time is institutionalized insanity, And then the other one is Hazel Henderson. We know too little to be pessimistic. We must go forward. I want to tell you, too, that following this event, like I said, Robert Whitaker is going to be here for a week. He's going to be presenting 5 different times. This will be the largest one there at the Unitarian Church on Thursday. But on Friday and Saturday, there's a group of 50 people from around the United States that are meeting here in Portland and in Oregon. I mean, they're administrators, policymakers, and some peer recovery people to rethink the whole and the policies around our mental health and our mental health systems. So people are watching Portland, and we are creating, and these are people who are up in the administrations. They want a different system, and they're going to actually create language of policy that can be put into place through legislation, through our demands, that will start really changing the system. It is ripe for a change, and we have to do it because of the children.
Absolutely. You know, you talked about models. One of the things that I want to throw out to the caller who seemed to be concerned about the way people use their spiritual beliefs is look at the models for these spiritual beliefs. If you've got someone such as Jesus who models peace toward brothers and sisters, that's what you should look toward. And as a matter of fact, if you have problems with people who claim to hold that faith, I would point to their model and say, are you modeling this same behavior that's been modeled for you? You know, that's it in a nutshell. You know, I want to say this for people who are interested in this. This is a very large and complex issue, and we're just trying to focus on two aspects of it. The first is that there's going to be the panel discussion that's going to be held this Thursday. And the second is there has to be a better way to use medicines to address the issue of keeping us healthy as human beings, and that medicine in and of itself is not the only tool. And so to that end, I want to encourage people to tune in at 11:30. Madness Radio host Will Hall will also speak with Robert Whitaker, and it will give you a chance to hear a little bit more about Robert's work so that you understand more about why they're having this panel discussion, and you'd be even further encouraged to come, especially if you have mental health issues in your families or with loved ones or other people that you care about.
One thing that, as we talk about the mental health industry here in Oregon and throughout the United States, and you touch upon the pharmaceutical industry, and that's a big, big problem, a big elephant, if you will. One thing that we've noticed here in our state that has been compounded is the number of times people who have been diagnosed with some sort of mental illness, violent confrontation with authorities.
Mm-hmm.
Are there better ways in which we can do that? What is missing about that, that so often people with mental illness have some sort of violent confrontation with police? Is this something that the conference will address, or is this something that we can think about differently?
Again, wow, you're bringing all the different dimensions, and this one is very, very clearly two sides of the same coin. It's people who are disturbed by the inequity of our society, by what we say we are and then what we do, and they either end up in the penitentiaries or they end up in the mental, I can't call it health, they call it the mental system. And so how do we confront that? I think, again, it starts with children. How do we treat children? How do we model a community and caring? How do we get it before people actually become violent? And I want to point out this one in Finland that this woman was talking about that Will Hall knows quite a bit about, and so does, of course, Robert Whitaker. And it is a model where when someone is having emotional disturbance, let's say they're acting out, let's say they're beating their head on the wall or they got the gun out and they say, you know, we're not going to be here anymore, that to use some medication if it's really necessary at that time. But in Finland, they use it very strategically. The whole idea is to sit down with the person, with the one or two people that he or she might trust at least a little bit, and let them share their reality. See, we don't let people share that reality. We tell them, you're sick, you're dangerous, and we don't want to hear from you. Go back and watch TV. And that there's no outlet for that. So it is the way in Finland, I just want to point out, it used to have the highest schizophrenic rate in Europe. Now it has the lowest after 20 years of these group sessions. Now, that doesn't mean everybody in this community or in this part of Finland has gone to those groups, but I think there's been a trickle-out effect that people who have sat in those groups with their loved ones, acknowledging the reality of their fear, their concern, their hatred of certain things, just let them process. We don't let people process. Get on it with it, we say. Get over it. Move on. So It's a major change, but it is happening. It is happening. It means slowing down and listening to each other. So it's not going to happen overnight, and I'm so sorry, it breaks my heart, the collateral damage in the in-between. But it is about using medication strategically, but most of all using connections with each other and with our diet and with this earth, exercising, all of these things.
Exercising,
fresh air. Yeah,
yes.
You bet.
And, you know, and just really briefly, and then we'll go to our caller, the fact that you have this model where you sit down and you orient a person is really important. Just the mere act of orienting a person and showing that you care and letting them verbalize what they're experiencing, and then you validate the parts which you share, you know, as a common reality, helps a person not only mentally center themselves, but it does change our personal chemistry. You know, our physiology and our personal chemistry will change and adjust. And that's part of what we talk about with fixing the relationships. Not that we need to actually fix somebody in the terms of putting new nuts and bolts on them, but calibrate ourselves to each other so that our personal and emotional and our familial connections are realigned and we're more sustaining to each other. And people forget that we used to do that a lot more.
Exactly. Before TV, for
before
one thing.
TV,
and
yes.
All these little hand games and plugs in your ears. And
let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Sean.
Hey, good morning. Well, I was just strictly listening. Fantastic show. But when I was hearing the talk about the Finnish people, I had to call in just simply with an analogy to that. And there's mm-hmm. a great story of... And I can't remember, of course, what tribe or where it is in Africa, but basically that when there's a similar situation like that where one of the members of the tribe or the family are being a problem to the rest, that the whole idea is you don't push them outside the circle, that what they do is they create a circle.
Yes.
And they
lovely.
Put the person in the middle, and they have the person, each person in the tribe, tell this individual why they're so important to the whole.
Yeah.
Not making them feel as though they're a problem and they need to leave.
Exactly.
And that's the very problem that we have in our society, being a very independent, autonomous-minded society, is that if it's a problem, it's not worth dealing with, and we need to get rid of it. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Beautiful.
Well,
thank you very much.
Beautiful. Do I have... Oh.
We have one more caller. Let's go to that. Good morning, Joanne. Oops. Okay. All righty.
Hello?
Yes, Joanne. Good morning.
Yes, hello. This is a hot subject, and some people and I in past years in Portland tried to work psychiatric oppression, but we failed. But, you know, I'm glad you're having all this activity about it. But the thing is, what I'm realizing is that a lot of the people that need to be at your meetings and that and panels are in jails and homeless. But anyway, I'm glad you're having it. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thank you. Excellent point.
That's an excellent point.
I want to let you know this is a manifesto or a statement that people that have been in the jails or been behind these walls that we call our mental hospitals have come together, and they have written up a manifesto, which is going to be the basis for, or they're going to really take into consideration during this conference of administrators and policymakers. It's called Medication Optimization, Choice and Alternatives, a statement from the Consumer Survivor Peer Recovery Movement.
Oh,
it's
great.
Quite wonderful.
Great.
And it will be online. They're still working over it. But mm-hmm. the voice, and bless your heart, any work you've done in the past, don't think it's gone for nothing. You have been tilling the soil. The soil is now ready to plant, and the seeds are growing.
Okay. So we have, it looks like, one caller here online. Good morning, Johnny.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
You know, when I was growing up, my grandma, always put us, when we had a hard time, they would put us in the circle, what we call the circle of trust or the circle of love, you know?
Okay.
And it was like the movie, you know, Meet the Parents, you know, Circle of Trust, you know?
I can't say I know the movie, but okay.
We would be the circle of trust, and you know, and when we had a problem, they put us in the circle of love and the circle of trust. And they walked around us and said, "You in the circle of trust, you in the circle of trust," and we will feel better because we're in the circle of love and the circle of trust.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your call.
Can I tell you a really wonderful story?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I, I, it just really moved me. And I think it says a lot, especially about children. Okay, thank you. That was lovely. And we should all build a circle of trust in our families and listen to each other and especially to our children, our very best teachers. I had an electrician, a young man of about 50. And I was telling him about this event a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to call him Sam. So he had put a light in my house, went up in the ceiling, you know, did things I have no idea how he does, and put the electricity down so I can have this light in my living room. He was telling me that he has two boys who are 10 and 11. Since they've been 5 and 6, they were diagnosed as autistic. Now, this is another label we're putting on people. They're autistic. Well, he said, I really thought that it was probably what they were eating. I was disturbed, and I tried to convince their mom, and she said, no, you know, it wasn't that. And she went along with the experts, the professionals, and they were put on medication. So these are two boys that half their lives they've been on medication for being autistic. The thing I loved about this conversation was Sam, who is this incredible electrician and used to work for Intel with hot wires because they can't shut all the computers down when they're working there. He said, I went to the classes for people with autism, and they had, you know, they have these, you know, you go through the list about what makes you autistic. He said, I thought, well, that's me. Oh. My boys are just like me and a lot of the guys I work with.
It's probably Asperger's.
Well, and whatever it is. I mean, well, this guy is, I mean, what I'm seeing is we're different. We're all different. And here he has two little boys. Now, the difference between him and his boys is he wasn't put on medication when he was 5 and 6. And we have no idea what's going to happen with these little boys as they grow up and their chemistry is changing and they're still on these medications. I just really love that, though. He said, they're just like me and the guys I work with.
Yes.
So just think
and
about
in other words,
that.
They have a place in society,
exactly.
too.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
Well, before we run out of time, I want to make sure that our listeners are familiar with the event that's happening. Could you tell us again the event and what's happening on that day?
Oh, wow. And that day at 5 o'clock at the First Unitarian Church between 12th and 13th in Salmon and Main, downtown Portland, we are having a reception, which we are going to have food, and you're invited, and we want to make it nice, and Bob Whitaker will probably make a cameo appearance just to say hello. Then at 6:30, we'll open the doors to go up into the main sanctuary and the doors from the outside. So at 6:30, people can come and actually go up and sit down. And then at 7, we'll start with this presentation of 2 hours, which will focus, the lion's share will be Bob talking about what he found out and what he's finding out all around the nation. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we have a panel of 5. So it'll be 6, including Bob. And 3 of these people are what we call administrator policymakers, and 3 of them are what we call peer support, people who've actually been in the system or connected with supporting those who've been in the system. So it's very well balanced, and they're all working to change this system from the place they're in. It's going to be quite lovely and quite uplifting because it is changing. And again, I want to thank all the ones of you out there. I think we've all, I'm 65. This has been going on since the 40s, 50s, 60s. Intuitively, we've known this isn't right. You can't take pills, and everything that's unique about us isn't a mental health.
It's not a mental health illness. It's not a mental illness.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's emotional. We're wonderful, creative, complex beings, and you can't change it with chemistry in a positive way. In some cases, yes, but in the majority, no.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Marsha Myers, and thank you, our listeners who have been listening. We hope that you are able to make the event this Thursday at First Unitarian Church, February 10th, and the cause. No cost.
No, it's $5 to $20 donation requested. No one turned away for lack of funds.
Okay. Right.
No one turned away for lack of funds.